This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4075, for Friday, the 15th of March, 2024. Today's show is entitled, Making a Pomodoro Timer. It is hosted by Norrist, and is about 20 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is Norrist uses the Pomodoro method to keep from getting fired.
Hello, hackers. I'm going to talk about making a Pomodoro timer out of a CircuitPython Express. Talk about what it is and why I made it. So I get distracted really easily when I'm supposed to be working, and that was really only made worse when a few years ago I started working at home. That's been one of my biggest challenges with working from home, is trying to manage distractions. So what'll happen is, if I'm trying to work on just kind of a single work dictated task, after 20, 30 minutes of being sort of focused on one thing, my mind just starts drifting and I start like looking for anything, just anything else that I can do or get distracted by. So in order to keep my productivity up to a standard that is satisfactory for my employer, I have to look for ways to make myself stay on task, and just kind of forcing myself through it. It works, but it's not fun, and I can stay on task, but I don't really do great work. So I decided that instead of fighting my sort of natural urge to only work for 20 or 30 minutes, to sort of embrace it. And so instead of treating it as a limitation, use that and sort of build a method of working around that, and force myself to take short breaks. So work for a period and take a short break for a period. So the method I decided to try is called the Pomodoro method. I'll have a link to the Wikipedia article about it. Sort of as a quick summary, it was developed in the 80s by a developer named Francesco Cirillo. And he used a kitchen timer to do it, which is a really good way, honestly, to do it. But it's just like I described. You work for an interval, typically 25 or so minutes, and then you take short breaks. And, you know, some people use it because it's it helps them work better. And mostly, I mean, I use it because it helps me work better, but also I can stay on task easier if I know there's a break coming up. So it improves my quality of work, but it also my mind can stay focused if I know, you know, in a finite amount of time, I'll let myself do something else. So when I started kind of digging in and how I wanted to do the Pomodoro technique, and I've tried it a few times before, the hard thing about it is sticking to it. So there's plenty of apps, you know, regardless of what kind of phone you have, or desktop apps or phone apps, there's a lot of things out there, and you can just use any timer will work just fine. But like I said, since the hard part about it is the discipline it's to use it, you know, I wanted something on my desk that I could look at, and it would actually kind of get my attention and remind me that I was supposed to be doing this thing. So I decided to make myself a timer using the Circuit Playground Express. So my, I don't know if it was my last episode or maybe two episodes ago, I talked about using a Raspberry Pi Pico to type some passwords for me. Kind of using the Pi Pico as a password manager for websites that don't let you copy and paste. And I mentioned that my first attempt at doing that was using this Playground Express. And I wanted to switch to a Pi because I wanted to do something else with the Playground Express. And the Pomodoro timer was the something else that I wanted to use it for. So just a quick refresher, if you didn't listen to it or if you forgot, the Playground Express is a microcontroller. It's made by the Adafruit company. It's kind of a unique circular shape, you know, instead of a, you know, rectangle or square like a lot of microcontrollers. It's a circle around the circle. There's LEDs, and then kind of in the middle, it's got a whole bunch of input devices. It's got a switch and a couple of buttons, and it can do temperature sensing. But like I said, the main reason I wanted to use it is because it has 10 LEDs in a circle, and they're multicolor LEDs. You can program the LEDs and which ones are on or off and what color they'll be. And it runs Circuit Python, which has a ton of libraries, including libraries that make it really easy to use the pixels called NeoPixels, the NeoPixels on the Circuit Playground Express. So the other thing I wanted to do while I was working on this is about once a year or so, I'll get a bug in my brain to try test-driven development again. And I've done it a few times. I like doing it. It's beneficial if you're not in a crazy rush. It does, if you, you know, overall, if you're doing a giant project, I don't think test-driven development will slow you down. But if you're doing something, you know, that's super quick, that you can do in an hour, test-driven development probably may not be the right thing to do if you're you know, totally focused on time. which is sort of a quick primer on what test-driven development is. It's before you write any actual code to do, you know, what you want to do, you write a test. And you write a test, you run the test, it should fail. And then you write the simplest code that will get that test to pass. And then once you're certain that the test is passing, then you can go back and refactor the code to make it better. And then while you're doing it, while you're making it better, you can keep running the test and make sure the test continue to pass. Then when you get that done, you move on. So you write a little chunk of code. Well, you write a test, then you write a little chunk of code that satisfies the test. You can fix the code up once you've got it done. Then you move on to the next piece. So a few advantages, reasons that I like to do test-driven development is that it kind of forces you to write your code in small functions, and that always makes it easier when you come back to the project later and there's either something you need to change or you forgot how it works. Anytime you can look at small discrete sections of code, at least for me, whenever I can look at small sections, it's easier for me to put together what the code is doing. It's harder to get lost in code that's in, you know, a small separate chunks. One little piece does one thing. Another advantage is that if you decide that you've got a small section that needs to be rewritten, or there's something you want to do or a bug you want to fix, It's easier to rewrite when it's chunked up, when your code is divided up into discrete sections. If there's something you've got to fix, you've only got to fix that one little section. So it makes it easier to test, and it gives you confidence whenever you are making changes to the code. The whole time you're making changes, you're running your test suite, and if you've got what's in your head as a major rewrite to do, or let's say there's a function that you totally want to change how that function works, that if you wrote good tests, it doesn't matter if you completely start from scratch and start over and write this bit of code totally differently. As long as the test pass, the application overall will work. Okay, so I mentioned that I was going to be writing the code for the Pomodoro timer in CircuitPython. And the way CircuitPython works is that you put a file, when you plug the board in, the single board computer in, it pops up like it's a USB thumb drive. And then you put a file on there on the circuit or on the microcontroller called code.py. And whenever the microcontroller boots, that's what it executes. It looks for a file called code.py and runs that file. So a lot of the code that you write for a microcontroller will only run on that microcontroller. And what I mean by that is if you've got code to turn an LED on or LED off or check a temperature sensor or something like that, that code's not going to work on your laptop because your laptop doesn't have those hardware devices. What I wanted to do when I was writing this is I wanted to put the smallest amount of code possible in code.py and then write kind of a separate library that I could test on my laptop. So I took as much code as I could and put it in a separate file called pomodoro.py. And then when I was writing the code and testing the code, I could do all that work on a laptop, just kind of separate. This way I didn't have to do, I could develop without the SBC. I could write some code, test the code without having to have the SBC right there. So if you look at code.py, some stuff that we'll have in there, and links in the show notes, by the way, all this stuff is checked into GitHub. I'll definitely have this stuff in the show notes. But in code.py, like I said, it's got the functions that require the hardware to be there to run. So the stuff in code.py, I didn't necessarily write tests for, but just some things that are actually in there is one, there's some variables and constants defined at the top of the file, including the break minutes and work minutes. So remember the Pomodoro technique, you work for a period and take a break for a period. So you can set those values. I mentioned in the Wikipedia article, it says 25 minutes and 5 minutes. I've actually found that after I'm working for about 20 minutes, I start glancing around and trying to figure out how much time is left. So I figured I may as well just set my timer to 20 minutes because after I'm working for 20 minutes, if I'm if my brain is kind of clicking around looking for a break, I may as well. It's best just to stop then. So I set my work period for 20 minutes, break period for 5 minutes. And then also in the code.py, this is where the code that's tracking the time, how long has it been since you started a work period or a break period? And then it, the way it knows how many LEDs to light up is it'll just take the how many minutes has it been, and then divide that by the number of LEDs, and then that will give you how many LEDs should be turned on. And I'll talk in a second about how the timer actually works. So I was pretty impressed with the CircuitPython and the Singapore computers that they could even keep up with time. Now, they don't do time like a computer does. You know, they don't have a battery and a clock or NTP or anything like that. But they can count. You know, they do know how much time has passed. So when I counting time on the microcontrollers is a little bit different than, but it works, and it's not too hard, and you can see examples of how I do it. But a little bit about how the actual timer works and how I use it. So like I said, it's got CircuitPython Express. It's got 10 LEDs and 2 buttons. That's primarily what I'm using. While I'm working or while it's counting down a work period, I'll turn all the LEDs white, and then there'll be a green LED for every sort of work segment that I've been doing. So, you know, if I've got it set for 20 minutes and, you know, there's 10 LEDs, then every 2 minutes, another LED will come on. So it'll, you know, one, you know, be all white with one green, and then 2 green and 3 greens. And if it's counting down correctly, by the time it gets to all the greens lit, that's the end of your work period. And then for break time, I do something similar, except I use blue instead of green. So it'll, you know, when I start a break, I'll just, you know, turn all the LEDs white, and then as the break period progresses, it'll turn more and more LEDs blue. Like I said, there's 2 buttons on the Circuit Playground Express. So I've got one button you press and it starts a work period, and the other button you press and it will start a break period. And when the periods are finished, when the work period is finished and the break period is finished, I wanted it to get my attention in case I'm distracted. So it will blink a few times to let me know that a period has just finished. And then while it's idle, instead of if it's not counting down, actively counting down a work period or a break period, what I'll do is I'll turn all the LEDs off, and except for the LED that's closest to the button to start work, that will be lit green to remind me that, you know, if I want to start work, I'll press that button. And the same for the button to start a break period. It will be the LED that's closest to that button will be lit blue. And then anytime while it's running, if you're in the middle of a break period and you want to start work, you can just press the button and it'll detect that and kind of abandon the break period and start a work period. So I'll have a few links at the bottom of the show notes. I'll link to my GitLab page where I've got this code written. I'll link to the Circuit Playground or Circuit Python page. There was another episode recently about Circuit Python and monitoring computer lab temperatures. I thought that was very interesting. This is something you are even remotely interested in, single board computers and or Python, I'd encourage you to take a look. I said it in the last episode I did about passwords. These Raspberry Pi Picos are a whopping $4. So it doesn't take a lot of investment to get started. And you don't, if you just want a blinking LED, that's all you need. If you want to, you know, Some microcontroller projects, you might have to get headers and breadboards and stuff like that, but you can definitely get started with CircuitPython and Raspberry Pi Pico. So I think that's it. That's all I've got to talk about. I hope you guys are excited about CircuitPython and microcontrollers. And I look forward to some feedback on the episode, and I will see you guys next time.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.